This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., wealth management specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Welcome to our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. It's great to have you here, and I appreciate you being here today. The Grand Hotel is my happy place, and our first live show of the year is going to be on June 20th. So make sure you hold that date on your calendar for our first live show of the year. Let's welcome to the show our buddy EJ Antoni, Dr. EJ Antoni, research fellow and the Heritage Foundation's Grover M. Herman Center for the Federal Budget. He's on X at Real EJ Antoni. What's up, my man?
Hey, Rich. Thanks for having me again. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's opening day. We got my Charlie Hustle jersey behind me. I got my Zeoli jersey behind me. I'm fired up, so.
Terrific, terrific. Well, good day to talk tariffs and all else going on.
Well, you're a local guy. You got to be excited, right?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Hey, you know what? And the other thing to remember is that the Biden curse is now lifted. People forget that every time either Joe or his wife went to one of our championship games, we always lost. So sure. Now that they're gone, hopefully they won't be going to any more games, and we're going to continue this winning streak that the Eagles started for us.
That's a great point right there. That's a solid point, EJ Antoni. You're already off to a great start. Let me play a clip for you. This is United Auto Workers President Sean Fain reacting to President Trump's automotive tariffs, cut number 10.
We are ecstatic to see an administration finally address the unfair trade laws in this country. These laws have destroyed the American working class. They've destroyed communities in this country. And virtually every state for decades.
And here's Auto Workers for Trump founder discussing the tariffs. This is from Fox News, cut number 11, Brian Pannebacker.
To hear an announcement like this that's going to force the auto companies to build their assembly plants in the United States instead of right across the border in Mexico is music to our ears. And we are so happy that President Trump is doing what he promised to do during his campaign, and that's to put heavy tariffs on these countries that are shipping vehicles back into the United States.
Now, EJ, obviously President Trump ran on this. He said he was going to impose tariffs. A lot of the auto workers voted for him, despite the president of the United Auto Workers endorsing Kamala Harris. But the number one question people have right now is this going to raise the price of cars that are not made in the United States of America? And I'm assuming the answer to that is yes.
Well, good question. First, though, I got to say, conspicuously absent from everything that union leadership is saying today is a big I'm sorry to President Trump, because, yes, he's doing what he campaigned on. So why didn't you endorse him when he was campaigning on all of right. these great things? But whatever the case, to your question, though, Rich, is this going to make cars more expensive? Not if you're making them here, which is why Hyundai just a few days ago announced that they're not only going to be building more cars here, they're going to be making the steel here that's going to go into their cars. So we already have the iron ore here. We're going to use that to make the steel. We're going to use that to make the sheet metal and the engine blocks, you name it. So it's about reshoring not just one part of production, but the entire supply chain. And look, if companies don't want to do that, then yes, they're going to get charged this tariff. Is some of that going to get passed on to consumers? Probably some of it, yeah. Is all of it? Certainly not. You know, this whole idea, Rich, that you put a tariff in place and it just all gets passed on to the consumer, I'm sorry, but that's just not what we observe in reality. That's not even economic theory. That's a myth. If it were really the case that a producer could pass on the entirety of a tariff, then you would see, for example, Wisconsin dairy farmers passing along to their Canadian customers the 270% tariff equivalent that Canada puts on American dairy products. Why don't they do that? Why do we not observe that? Because at that point, you can't be competitive at any price. And so that's why a lot of our dairy never even makes it into Canada. People are shocked when I tell them this, Rich, but many of our exporters actually have better access to Russian markets than they do to Canadian ones. And yet we're told constantly that Russia is the enemy and Canada is our friend. I'm sorry, but if you go by trade practices, that's certainly not the case.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the tariffs that Canada imposes on us today, and hats up to my buddy Michael Pelka, who put them in a nice little easy-to-understand chart today for his prep that he puts out. But I mean, some of these tariffs are just insane. Chicken, 263%. Turkey, 179%. Butter, 175% tariff on butter that goes into Canada. Certain fish products, 160%. I mean, the lowest on the list is peanut butter at 25%. So, I mean, that's freaking nuts right there.
Exactly. And see, Rich, this is where I get so frustrated with people when they talk about how Trump is starting a trade war. Guys, wake up. It is December 8th, 1941, not December 6th. We've already had a war declared on us. We just haven't been fighting back. I mean, this has been going on for decades. Trump isn't starting a trade war. He's just the first president in I don't know how long who's willing to get up and say, you know what, enough is enough. We're going to fight back. If you're going to do this to us, we're going to do it to you and see how you like it. And by the way, there are two very easy ways that we can make all of this end tomorrow, but other countries don't want to make it happen. And it's this. They can drop their trade barriers that they put in place on the United States, tariffs and non-tariff barriers. And what that does is it gives our exporters more access to foreign markets, which means we can produce more, which means we can employ more Americans. And if they don't want to do that, then fine. We'll put these tariffs in place and basically force people to make more stuff here. Now, all of a sudden, more of our manufacturing is competitive when we do it here at home, and you will still end up with more Americans employed and more production here at home, especially when you combine tariffs with the carrot, right? It's a carrot and stick approach. So tariffs are the stick. What's the carrot? It's tax cuts. It's deregulation. It's making the most business-friendly environment ever here in the United States. So not only do you have a disincentive to produce abroad, you have an incentive to produce here at home.
Now, obviously, with all this is happening, you know, you've got a number of people out there saying these tariffs are just going to be a tax on the American people. Like Senator Rand Paul, you know, obviously very, very much opposed to this. But the one thing that I think is obvious is that, number one, we don't export our cars to Europe because it's the tariffs that they impose on us. So that's number one. So the American automobile has no market in Europe, as the president has explained. Number two, to the point about Hyundai, they can build plants here. They can open plants here and create jobs and do all of that here in the United States of America, and giving them the incentives to do so. And I actually think that that helps them with their products. So, you know, we used to endorse Volvo on the show, and I would always say Volvo had a big plant in South Carolina, and that mattered to a lot of people. And they built one of their car lines in South Carolina. It was the S-Class. So I had a listener one day who said that he was going to go buy that. He wanted to buy an American car. Since even though it's a European brand, the fact that it was an American-made car, that mattered to him, and he went down there and purchased it. I think some people, though, are confused, though, about how the formula works in terms of if the cars foreign, but the parts are made in the United States of America, or if the car is made in the U.S., but some of the parts are foreign? Like, how does all that get figured out in terms of understanding how the tariffs apply?
Okay, this is a really, really great question, Rich, for a couple of different reasons.
I ask great questions, EJ. That's what I do, EJ and Tony. That's why I'm the host of the show.
And the best host, believe me, okay? No one else hosts the way you do, all right? So, look,
and
we,
by the
we
way, before,
remember...
before you answer that, I got to say, your cousin Vince is crushing it with filling in, I mean, taking over Bongino's slot. Good for him.
Oh, thank you. I was actually on with them. On with them today, so I get to talk to my two favorite people in one day. This is incredible. So now, to your point, though, to your very, very good question, Rich. When you have something like a car that is made of so many thousands of individual parts, and when those parts are constantly crossing borders in different stages of production, right? The raw material may come from one country, it goes to another country to be processed, refined. It goes to another country to be made into a sub part, goes to another country to be made into a larger part, et cetera. It is not uncommon for something to cross a border a dozen different times before it finally ends up in the final assembly of a vehicle. Okay, so there's a lot of moving parts here. It's very, very complicated. This is part of the reason why this does not go into effect immediately on all vehicles, especially things like the Mexico and Canada trade agreement, the USMCA. So we're going to take some time basically to figure out, okay, how much of each individual car is truly being made here in the U.S. versus what Canada allows China to do, where they abuse country of origin provisions within the USMCA, and China has basically set up shop in Canada. They slap the made in Canada label on something and then send it here to the U.S. to avoid the Chinese tariffs. Those are the kinds of abuses that this will help eliminate. So if we look at 2024, for example, Rich, about half of the cars sold in the U.S. were made in the U.S., but even the ones that were made here, only about half, and this is probably a generous estimate, only about half of the ones that were made here are actually made from parts made in the U.S. So if you want to look at it in terms of all the automotive parts that were sold over the course of last year, it's probably only about a quarter. And again, that's a conservative estimate. It's likely less than that. So very little of the automotive industry exists in America anymore. And that's problematic. It's problematic not just from the standpoint of having a healthy manufacturing sector and employing people, but it's also problematic from a national security standpoint. Let's not forget that it was Ford that was able to turn around in World War II and build bombers at a rate of about one every 25 hours or so. I mean, that's absolutely astonishing. In little more than a day, they were able to crank out an incredibly sophisticated piece of aircraft engineering.
So E.J. Antoni's with me, Dr. E.J. Antoni of the Heritage Foundation. We're talking about the impact of President Trump's 25% tariffs on automakers. I think the other question then that people want to understand here is, if we're putting tariffs on Canada, for example, and if Canada's imposing all these tariffs on us, what did the USMCA accomplish? Because, I mean, wasn't the goal of the USMCA, the United States-Canada-Mexico trade agreement, to level the playing field here? And it doesn't seem like the playing field was leveled. So what changed between when that was signed and where we are today?
Good question. What basically happened, Rich, was it was a step in the right direction, but it certainly didn't get us all the way to the finish line. So it helped reduce a lot of tariffs. Unfortunately, most of the non-tariff barriers were left in place. The negotiators just weren't able to get anywhere on that. So again, was it an improvement? Yes. Was it perfect? No. Unfortunately, though, we've seen a lot of bad faith, frankly, on Canada's part, where, again, the abuses by China in terms of those country of origin laws has been pretty prolific. And as a consequence of that, you could argue that over the last 4 years, with Biden in the White House or whoever was controlling the auto pen, not really giving a hoot about what Canada was doing in terms of these abuses, you could argue that we did go backwards because there was no watchdog to make sure that the provisions of the USMCA were actually being followed.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. There is a carve out under the USMCA. Vehicles and parts imported under USMCA will be given the opportunity to certify their U.S. content and systems. The 25% tariff will only apply to the value of their non-U.S. content. USMCA compliant automobile parts will remain tariff free until a process is established to apply tariffs to their non-U.S. content. The 25% tariff will be applied to imports of passenger vehicles, including sedans, SUVs, crossovers, minivans, cargo vans, and light trucks. Key automobile parts, including engines, transmissions, powertrain parts, electrical components, and additional parts as necessary. So I guess, you know, and I understand, too, I mean, you look at the declining production, right? So the White House put together some points on this, which I found very interesting. In 1985, U.S. owned and operated facilities manufactured 11 million automobiles. In 2024, Americans bought approximately 16 million vehicles, and half of those were imports, so about 8 million. Of the other 8 million vehicles assembled in America and not imported, so assembled here in the United States, not imported, the average domestic content is only 40 to 50%. So, you know, you think you're buying an American car, you think you're driving a Ford and, you know, you're feeling really good about that F-150 or whatever. But of even though that car was assembled here in the United States of America, it was made in America, the domestic content of that car is only about 40 to 50%. So of the 16 million cars bought by Americans, only about 25% of the vehicle content can be characterized as made in America. And again, I don't think people realize that. I mean, I bought a Jeep recently, and part of the reason why I bought a Jeep is not only because it's badass and I'm having a midlife crisis, obviously, and that's what you have to do, but I thought, you know, American made. It's got the American flag all over it. I'm like, yeah, baby, let's do this. But to find out that a lot of the parts are not made in the United States of America, that's the kind of thing we don't really understand.
Exactly, Rich. And see, this is where I think it's really, really important that we make the consumer aware of what exactly they're buying, and also that we really drill home on what nations are following through on their agreements. So going back to Canada here, you know, the idea that they're going to allow China to make something there, or they're just going to buy something from China and then slap the Made in Canada sticker on it, so that we think we're essentially keeping it here at home, at least insofar as North America is home, it's just not the case at all. And ironically, you mentioned Ford. There are several different vehicles in some of our domestic automakers' lineups, whether it's GM or Ford, where you can find lineups from Toyota, for example. You can find cars within the Toyota lineup that, if you go by the number of parts and everything, are more American-made than Ford or GM. And again, a lot of that just has to do with how much of the supply chain has been outsourced. And unfortunately, that has created a lot of vulnerabilities for us, all of which was exposed, by the way, in 2020, when all of a sudden you couldn't buy a car because a single part that was only made overseas that you can't make here in the United States, there was a backlog on that. And so all of a sudden you just couldn't buy a car for 6 months. I mean, it's ridiculous. Is it more efficient? Sure. Is it more profitable for the corporation? Sure. But it's not good for the country. It's not good for the American worker. And it's certainly not good for anybody in the case of emergencies.
It seems to me that if you are anti-tariff, if you're somebody who wants truly free trade, and again, you know, I'm not an economist, so a lot of this stuff goes over my head. Certainly, nobody told me there'd be any math. to quote one of my favorite lines from Saturday Night Live. But if you're truly free trade and you don't want tariffs, it would seem as if the only approach to getting rid of tariffs is for the United States to impose reciprocal tariffs, because we're getting screwed here when you look at this breakdown of what the other countries impose on us. And I don't know, maybe the people that are anti-tariff, and there's a lot of very purists on this free trade issue, are not aware of that. But I guess, how do they think those tariffs go away if the United States doesn't push back?
Well, look, I'm for free trade, but I'm for free trade on all trade, not just international trade, right? All these people who say, oh, I'm for free trade. Why aren't you for free trade in terms of domestic trade? If you're going to fight so hard not to have tariffs, why aren't you fighting to eliminate property taxes, income taxes, sales taxes? Why is it we're only going to tax domestic transactions, but we're not going to tax international transactions? That makes no sense. Do you care more about being a globalist, or do you care more about being an American? I would much rather fight to eliminate domestic taxes before I worry one bit about about international taxes. So there's that component to it. The other thing, Rich, and this is what I think you're getting at here, you know, academics have been telling us for half a century now that if you want free trade, just don't have any tariffs or non-tariff barriers on your side, and who cares what the other nation does. Okay, we've tried that. We've tried it for five decades. It has helped hollow out America's industrial core. It has helped create the Rust Belt. It has helped destroy blue-collar America. And sure, white-collar America has done just fine, right? It has made it so that the things that they buy from overseas have gotten a lot cheaper. I totally get that. And I'm not trying to play the class war game. Believe me, I'm not. But this is just the facts, right? Going about free trade as on a one-way street, in other words, only making sure that foreign producers can get to our markets while our producers can't get to foreign markets, that has proven to be disastrous for a lot of Americans. Maybe not all Americans, but a lot of Americans. And so you're right. If you want truly fair trade and free trade, then that means that you need to follow the golden rule. You do unto others as they do unto you. And so if you're going to impose tariffs and non-tariff barriers on us, then we will do the same to you. If you punish us, we will punish you. Again, Trump is not starting a trade war here. He is simply responding to attacks that have been going on for decades. It would be, going back to the Pearl Harbor example, Rich, it would be as if this is December 8th, 1951, and the war has been going on for many, many years, and we are finally choosing to respond.
All right, last point. Let me counter that by saying, though, you know, for people that aren't white collar, that are blue collar and are trying to make a living, now that television that they want to buy theoretically is going to be a lot more expensive. So are we worried about that the prices of these things are going to increase in a way that's going to hurt the economy and hurt the very workers that we're trying to help with this?
We're not worried for two different reasons. One, although a lot of people say that tariffs are regressive, meaning that lower income folks pay much more of a tariff, that's just simply not the case. I'm sorry, but are lower income folks buying Fords and Chevys and Toyotas and Hondas, or are they buying Mercedes and BMWs?
No, but the working class does, right? People, the working, I mean, blue collar workers, I mean, the guy, you know, the plumbers and the electricians and all the other people, a lot of them are buying pickup trucks, right?
Oh, sure. But my point is they're buying things like Toyotas and Chevys, not BMWs and Mercedes, right? So the idea that somehow imports are paid disproportionately by people on the low income scale, the math just doesn't pencil out there. So there's that. The other thing is this is actually an incredibly small portion of President Trump's overall economic agenda. Look at his tax agenda, for example. That's $4.5 trillion. If you look at all of the different tariffs, is it a lot of money? Sure, but it's a couple hundred billions of dollars. In other words, it's much, much smaller than what's going to happen with taxes. So even if you say I'm paying more because of tariffs, you're going to keep much more of your income because of the tax cuts. And that's before you even start talking about other portions of the economic agenda, Rich, like the deregulation agenda. So all in all, again, is this going to cause some increase on some consumers? Sure, there's no doubt about that. Is it going to be catastrophic? Absolutely not. Is it going to be more than offset by other positive changes in the president's economic agenda? Absolutely.
I will say Senator Rand Paul did say that even though prices will go up, it will not lead to a recession or a depression or anything like that. And it would be offset by the other things you just mentioned. So no doubt about that. Well, look, I mean, he ran on this. He said he was going to do it. He's fulfilling his promise to do it. It wasn't like he ran on the campaign trail saying he hated tariffs and got in there and there's like, here's tariffs. Everybody's like, what's going on here? I mean, he's doing what he said he would do. So, you know, you can't fault him for that. He told everybody this was coming. EJ Antoni, always a pleasure, my friend. Follow EJ on X at Real EJ Antoni. Don't fall for the fugazis. And there are fugazis out there. Real EJ Antoni. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, thank you, Rich.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Cioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Now, you see, Mama Zioli just texted me. I bet Patrick could explain tariffs to you, Rich. Thanks, Mom. That's nice. My 10-year-old son. That's nice. I mean, are you giving a compliment to Patrick or are you saying that your son's a dumbass? What is it? I'm trying to understand. What do you think it is, Matt DeSantis? Is she giving my son a compliment or just taking a shot at me? Or is it both?
I was going to vote for both. It seems a little of both to me.
I bet your son could do it. He's smarter than you.
That's sort of a compliment, though, in a way, because you've raised Patrick.
Yeah, I have raised Patrick.
His
but he doesn't have my math genes, lucky guy.
Well,
so
that's good, yeah.
You know, he's smarter than me, that's for sure. I bet you Reagan could do better. She's five, well, and she knows math better than you based on your grades.
Yeah. That one's definitely an insult.
That would be an insult. Be careful, baby. Reagan's going to be taking over your show before you know it. She's a better talker than you, too.
Is she going to be nicer to the producers?
Not to you. Justin, yes, but you can't even get me a little person.
I'm trying.
I don't ask for much. I ask for a little person, a dwarf. I don't know why I can't get a dwarf. That's all I want.
A member from the union. Well,
trying to get a dwarf.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be that hard to get a dwarf. Get me a dwarf.
They're busy.
They're not busy because they're not working because Disney didn't hire them. They went with CGI freaking garden gnomes.
They're busy striking.
So they're not busy, actually. So Alec Baldwin's movie is actually coming out?
Yeah, I think it was 4 years after the incident.
Rust is coming out. Do you think his on the inside, he's got to be rusting after the way his wife, Hillary, Hilaria, talked to him, right? I mean, as a man, whatever manliness he had left has to be completely pure rust at this point after the way she just belittled him in front of everybody. I'm talking, you're not talking, okay? When I'm talking, you're not talking. And then he had to go on and grovel and talk about her ex-boyfriend's junk that he had to see.
Ugh.
On his just groveling tour. The groveling tour. Well, we have the trailer for Russ. We'll play that when we come back. And, you know, there's an insider of Biden's campaign, this guy Michael LaRosa, who spoke with Cenk Yeager. It's an interesting thing right now. The guys from the Young Turks, who, by the way, there's nothing young about them anymore. But nevertheless, they're still going with that name. Fine. They've turned completely on the Democrat Party and Biden and the establishment of their party. And they have just been saying for months now what a disaster the Democrat Party has become. Well, when we get back, I have a clip for you of an insider to the campaign who goes on to talk about how manipulative they were to the press. Constant manipulation of the media. Like I've said to you many times, the biggest political scandal of my lifetime is the cover-up of Joe Biden's cognitive decline. It was an all-out cover-up, corporate media, big tech, and the government, the unholy triad all working together to cover up Joe Biden's cognitive decline. And it goes all the way back to 2020. And you know what? By 2020, it was decline. By 2024, when he got out of the race, his brain was just pudding at that point. Pudding. That's all it was. And that's why the auto pen was used all the time. And the truth of the matter is that all these people knew about it and they covered it up and they hid it from us. And like I've said to you a million times, if Kamala Harris is going to run for governor of California, if we have a press corps that will hold her accountable, she needs to answer for this. And I've said this before, and I've said this on Fox News, and maybe I didn't mention I was on Fox News recently, but I've said this on Fox News. The reason why Kamala Harris would not go on Joe Rogan's podcast or come on this show or would go on a show that's actually going to ask tough questions is because of that. That was the big thing. The cover-up of Joe Biden's cognitive decline, which is absolutely the scandal of our political lifetime. Woke Howard Stern was not going to ask her about that. Woke Howard Stern was not going to ask Kamala Harris about it, and he didn't. He didn't ask her about it. The View wasn't going to ask her about it. In fact, The View served her up a softball and said, hey, was there anything you changed? And she couldn't answer the question. And the Call Her Daddy podcast was certainly not going to ask about that either. So the hiding, the keeping her away from having to discuss the fact that they knew the president of the United States of America did not have a functioning brain. Biggest political scandal of our lifetime. No question about it. Absolutely 100%. And that's the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria. VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VanariaDental. VanariaDental.com. With two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Coming right back.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
DEI nonsense. HHS has axed more than $300 million in gender and DEI-related healthcare grants to California alone. Buddhism and HIV stigma in Thailand. That was one of the grants. Speaking of Thailand, I've been watching season 3 of White Lotus. It's freaking weird. You guys watching that show at all?
I am, and I don't know if I like this season. It's getting very strange.
Yeah, very, like, really weird. Like, the last episode was very disturbing.
It's getting more disturbing with each passing episode. There was... can we say what's going on? I don't think it's going to be too much,
I don't think we can. I don't think we can explain.
It's gotten progressively stranger and stranger with each passing episode, and I'm nervous for what waits ahead in the final 2 weeks.
And I'll tell you who I'm really ticked off at is Clay Travis, because he's the one that recommended it and said the show, the season was really good, because there was a clip of them talking about Trump, you know, that went viral, because the one woman goes to church and went viral, and he tweeted that out saying, this is a sign that culture's changing, movies and TV shows are changing, it's real, because the scene wasn't mocking of the woman. But I think that was way too early of a call to make.
Yeah, there was a scene where Leslie Bibb's character reveals to her friends that she voted for Donald Trump, and her two friends are very anti-Trump. They're very progressive. I think one of them is actually supposed to be like a Hollywood star. And
right.
Leslie Bibb stands her ground, defends herself, and says not every Trump supporter is an awful human being, and that they need a new perspective on things. But that scene alone is not enough to carry, six episodes now. It's not great. And I thought the second season was very, very good.
That particular scene was a way to entice somebody to come into a bar that's terrible, like by giving you a free drink, and you walk in there and you're looking around and you're like, okay, I got a free drink out of this, but I don't really want to stay. I'm like, no, you gotta stay. You're like, oh, this is really a big mistake. But that scene lured people in because that went viral. There were millions of views on that scene. Everybody went, wow, look at this, the Trump effect on Hollywood. Well, let me tell you something. That was that 2 minutes in that scene. That's all there is.
The other 6 hours, not great.
Yeah. The 98% left is freaking... I can't even get the words out.
Did you see the first two seasons?
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah,
they were good.
That's why I'm holding out a little bit of hope, because I thought the first season was a little bit slow.
There's only two episodes left.
Well, maybe they'll end.
And apparently Patrick Schwarzenegger, the actor, said he won't be watching the last two episodes with his parents.
Uh-oh.
Arnold Schwarzenegger and Maria Shriver, he won't watch with his parents because that's how freaking weird and disturbing they are.
Although I don't think
Schwarzenegger and Maria Shriver are still together, are they?
No, they're divorced.
He banged the nanny, right? He pulled the Doug Emhoff and
knocked her up, I believe.
Knocked up the nanny?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what those guys do. Schwarzenegger, Emhoff, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's not a good sign. I didn't know that, because the scene in the last episode featuring Patrick Schwarzenegger already... pretty uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, disgusting. So if it gets worse than that,
yeah.
I'm going to throw up in my living room. Let me play. I've been teasing this thing with Suzanne Somers. I'm really curious about this, because this is an interesting thing with where we're going here as a society with AI. And, you know, Elon came out the other day and he made this prediction that within 10 years, we're going to have all these things based on artificial intelligence, you know, cars that are driving without anyone in it, not just even driver assist, but just cars that are driving by themselves, which they already have, and, you know, actual robots helping you in every way. So Suzanne Somers, beloved actress, Three's Company, she died. And just very sad, died of cancer. Her husband was very distraught. They were together for like 70 years or so, 60 years, a very long time, whatever it was, 50 years, whatever. And most people would be relieved at that point. Not him. He decided, I'm kidding. It's a joke. Just relax. He decided he was going to hire someone to build a robot, an AI robot, who looks and sounds like his wife. And so I want to play this for you. And if you're watching on YouTube, and then I'll, and you can listen if you and not, I'll describe the visual. And then I want to get your opinion. Would you go down this road? Would you do this? Would you commission somebody to create a robot replica of your husband or wife if they were to die? Because this is going to become the thing. Like that, this is, you know, they literally load up the robot's computer with memories and stories. And so you can sit there and talk about your vacation to Europe 30 years ago. And the robot can sit there and converse with you about it. Here's the clip. Take a listen and watch this.
Of course, I remember meeting you was like a breath of fresh air. Your energy is so uplifting. It always makes my day to connect with wonderful people like you. What was your favorite moment from our time together?
Does the name Alan Hamill mean anything to you?
Does the name Alan Hamill mean anything to you? And apologize, the internet is really bad here.
Let me just pause it for a second. I feel like if you're going to roll out the Suzanne Summers lifelike robot, you get good Wi-Fi. Am I right? Like upgrade the Wi-Fi plan. If the friggin' thing needs to operate on Wi-Fi and you're rolling this out now, and it's the dude's dead wife replica robot, like don't just hop on the free Starbucks Wi-Fi or the lobby Wi-Fi. Am I right? Can I just say that?
I think it was a faulty microphone.
Is that what it was?
I think, yeah.
Because the guy's going to the name. He probably paid like $50 million for this friggin' robot, and you know, so.
Well, there's two microphones floating around. I think Alan is holding one microphone so that the audience can hear him, but the AI robot is operating off of a completely different microphone that's not actually in his possession at the moment. I think that's where the problem is developing from.
All right, so let's continue with this. Go ahead.
Do you remember the name Alan Hamill?
Of course I do. Alan Hamill is my husband of 55 wonderful years. He's my partner in everything, from life to love, and we've shared so many beautiful memories together. Do you have a favorite memory of us?
What's your favorite memory that we share?
There are so many. One of my favorites is when Alan and I were filming a cooking segment together a long time ago. We had a little mishap with the blender. Let's just say it didn't go as planned, and we ended up wearing more than the smoothie than we actually made. We laughed so hard, and it became a running joke in our house. It's those lighthearted moments that really bring us closer together. Do you have a favorite cooking disaster story?
I have many. Do you realize that the last 42 years we were together, we never spent 1 hour apart?
So it looks like a very young Suzanne Summers. I mean, obviously, if you're going to build a model, you're going the young model. You're not going to go with the older model right now. I mean, obviously. So he's going with the early marriage model of Suzanne Summers. The Three's Company looks very much like the Three's Company Suzanne Summers. I don't blame him. That's what I would do in that sense. It's really not so much a question of would you do this for your dead spouse. I'm more interested would you do this for your living spouse. And then, like, kind of send them off on a vacation, you know what I mean? And have the anyway, let me know what you think. Is that creepy? This is the future. This is what they're offering now for people that lose somebody and they're grieving. You can have them recreated as a in robot form. So let me know if you would do this. 855-839-1210. You can tweet along the show at Rich Zeoli, or you can weigh in on the YouTube chat. But this is the future. This is where we are right now in terms of we got robots and AI, and this stuff's only going to keep going and going. And as much as I think it sounded like Suzanne Summers and it looked like her, robot was a little stiff. The other thing is, and I don't want to sound like a kind of perverted here, it's a family show, but I'm assuming that the robot also serves another function.
I hope not.
Because isn't that a whole other thing?
I mean, I don't know for certain, but I'd like to believe that that's not where they spent too much time concentrating. Just deal with the tech, deal with the responses.
Having coffee with it and reminiscing about the good old days and, you know.
I don't.
You know. Because he's thinking, I've been married for 60 years and I got this hot young robot now and, you know, it's you know.
If you're putting in the order request, that's an awkward thing to even bring up, right?
Yeah, it's like you're on the phone, you're like, so, yeah, I'll take the memories package for an extra $5,000. And can I get the original package? You know, the one where the...
which package, sir?
The waterproof shower package. Yeah, that's, I don't know. I gotta be honest, it's a little creepy. It's a little creepy, don't you think?
Yeah, I wasn't really impressed with her responses either, if I'm being honest.
No, it sounded very, you know, Justin, would you get a dead, like if your fake girlfriend died, would you get a robot to replace her?
No, I just leave the memories as they were. This just seems way, way too much. Doing way too much.
But at least to get the younger model, am I right? I mean, you know, there's that.
Did you ever see that movie Subservience with Megan Fox that came out last year?
No.
It's a similar storyline.
You're the only one who sees movies nobody sees.
I was on Netflix, so I watched it. Anyway, that doesn't end well for the family.
My mother can't believe I just said that. She literally just texted me. I can't believe she's listening. You can't say that. It's a family show. You got to be careful, baby. Be careful. You're offending your whole audience. You know what would happen, though, if that guy had gotten the Suzanne Summers robot when Suzanne Summers was still alive?
What?
It would have been Three's Company.
Hey.
All right, that's not my best work.
That was bad.
That was bad. That
you should
was bad.
Apologize to Mama Zioli for that one.
I'm going to apologize to everyone for that one. I was testing that to see if it would go over well on Fox News Saturday Night with Jimmy Fallon. Not going to use that one. You know, sometimes you got to take some risks. So
yeah, leave that one on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, that'll stay on the cutting room floor. I already pushed to the edge with bat nipples this week. I don't need to go any further. And my Marvel/DC advisor, Brian Glass, who knows all things movies, points out to me that remote viewing, which we talked about, the CIA, which is an actual thing the CIA did, the Central Intelligence Agency, was portrayed in the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats, featuring Bat Nipples himself, George Clooney, and a number of other actors. Did you see that, Matt DeSantis?
I did not see that one, no.
Okay. I may have to check that one out. But, well, that's interesting. I don't know. I just... The whole AI thing kind of freaks me out, doesn't it? A little bit, you know? I mean, at some point, all these things are going to be automated, and I don't know. They were talking the other day about, will podcasting become automated? Could ChatGPT just replace me? You know what I mean? But could I replace me every Friday and literally just have the AI version of me do the show on Fridays? AI Richie.
You should, you know, reach out to this company and see if they can create an AI Richie for Fridays, especially during the summer.
That's a great idea. I'll build a robot of myself, and then I could just take every Friday off. It'll be in here. I just have to get the speech right, so it's not, you know, I think these policies are good for America. You got to, like, you know, speed it up, like, you know, double the speed. Got to capture my energy and enthusiasm. Give that robot a line or something.
Will AI Richie also be in a boot, or?
Oh, AI Richie will be bulletproof. Okay. You can't hurt AI Richie. What was the other thing? This is what I wanted to mention too. Let's see. I got this now. I got a lot of great audio for you, too. But We're going to do this. I'm going to take it. I want to play the Rust trailer. Do I have time to play the Rust trailer for Alec Baldwin's movie?
Yeah.
All right. I think at this point, Alec Baldwin would kill his wife and replace her with AI, an AI robot, if he could, based on the way she treated him the other day with that mocking in public, that humiliation. That was great. That was a wonderful moment for men everywhere to look at Alec Baldwin and go, man, I knew there was a reason we hated you, hated your guts, and this is what you get. Well, his movie where he shot and killed a woman, I cannot believe they're actually moving forward with this movie. But the question is, will this movie make less money than Snow White? That's the only question I have here. I really, honestly, this movie Rust. Here's the trailer for it. Take a watch and a listen. Oh, wait, stop. Hang on a second. We got the Phils just hit two home runs. Hang on. I need two bell rings. Give me two dings for the Phils. There you go. Boom. Look at that. How many views do we have on that tweet, Matt DeSantis?
Last I saw, it was 1.3 million.
1.3 million. All right. So yesterday I had on the show
Steve Grillo.
Steve Grillo, who's an intern from the Howard Stern Show. We're up to 1.3 million views on that tweet. That's pretty good. 1.3 million. That's what we call viral. That's a viral tweet. That's viral right there. Johnny Cook's all fired up about the tariffs. Johnny, I don't know what to tell you, man. This is what Trump ran on. And, you know, this is his thing. I know you don't like it, but you should not be surprised by this, because this is what he did. And he ran and, you know, I mean, I hope he's right, because like I've said, if the economy goes bad, he will be very unpopular very, very quickly. And that's not what Trump wants to be. Trump does not want to be an unpopular president. So I don't think he's doing this to be vindictive. I really think he's doing this because he thinks it's going to work. If it doesn't work, he's going to have to reevaluate, and he will, because he does not want to leave office as an unpopular president. His whole goal here is to leave office as the most beloved president of all time. You got to understand something about Donald Trump's mentality, okay? He doesn't settle in anything for second best. Oh, they're showing that clip from Fox 29 with Mike Jarrett and Bob Kelly with the water main break that went viral yesterday. They're showing that on The Five yesterday. Mike Jarrett pretending that the water main break is him, because he mentions his urologist. You see that on the TV right there? Look at that. That's very funny. That went viral. And they're actually playing that on The Five. Look at that. So Trump's mentality is he's not going to be second best. He's going to be the best, period. He doesn't want to be behind Lincoln. He doesn't want to be behind Reagan. He wants to be the best. That's the mentality he has with everything he does in his life, which means that if the tariffs do not make the American economy strong, then he's going to pivot. He's going to pivot. If the tariffs result in the American economy becoming strong because other countries lower their tariffs on us, and then we lower the tariffs on them, and then you get more free trade and everybody wins, that's what he's going to wind up doing. Everything with him is going to be motivated by what's going to make him popular. And there's nothing that makes a president more popular than a strong economy. I don't care who you are. He's Teflon now, but he won't be Teflon if in 3 years these policies come back to bite us and the American economy is in the toilet. They'll chase him out of town. And he knows that. He's not a fool. So everything he does is governed by that principle. Everything that Donald Trump does is governed by the principle of, I want to be the best. I want to be remembered as the best. I want to be remembered as the greatest president ever. That's what he's not doing this because he's trying to prove a point, to make a point, knowing it's going to cause disaster for the American economy. So that's the only thing I can tell you about this, is that that's his driving force and his driving motivation, which is why I don't think anybody should be worried about this. Because that's what motivates the guy every single day. And to that point, let me play a quick clip for you. This is Larry Kudlow. He had Russ Vaught on today, the OMB director. They've had $3 billion Biden-era emergency slush fund that they're cutting. $3 billion slush fund. I mean, we're finding waste and abuse everywhere. HHS just identified all these friggin' weird grants, and then we got something about DEI tomatoes or something. Anyway, take a listen to this.
Taking that money out, the $3 billion out, which is an important step, there was no emergency. Is that a form of executive presidential impoundment?
It is not. It is using the way they literally had written the appropriations law to give us the discretion to say that these particular funding accounts were emergency. Mm. And because was constructed under Joe Biden, and it was a CR that carried over the terms, we had that discretion and we used it. And that's what we promised the country when we said we would be going forward with the continuing resolution. It was never an intent to be at current law levels. We were going to use every opportunity we could to drive spending down. You saw that this week, and you're going to continue to see it in the weeks ahead.
Taking that money out.
There you go. All right. So what was the vote on the bill, by the way? What are we going with?
After an hour and 67 votes, the results came as follows. Tied for third place was that deep-sounding ominous bell and the Taco Bell ding. So we're avoiding getting sued.
Okay.
Second place with 21% was the classic Zioli ding. And the winner and the new bell that will be played every time the Phillies score a home run with 50% of the vote, the one you heard just a couple minutes ago, the official Citizens Bank Park bell that the Phillies play every time they hit a home run.
All right. Let's hear it one more time, just so we can all be familiar with what the new bell is going forward. Just a standard bell. Not too much there. That's what the audience wants. Now, just so you know, DeSantis tried to rig this election.
Why do you have to tell everyone?
No, he
this?
Did.
Why?
He did. This is outrageous. You're like a Democrat in freaking Illinois, is what you are. Tried to rig this election for his Taco Bell bell.
I didn't rig it. I voted early and often.
How many times?
I think I used three or four YouTube accounts, but I couldn't get Taco Bell out of last place, unfortunately.
That's outrageous that you're logging in with different accounts to vote on a stupid bell sound. First of all, you work on the show, you can't vote. It's like you can't win a contest. It's the same principle.
I can vote. I can vote three times, evidently. YouTube didn't stop me.
Well, you know what? I'm glad karma stopped you and you lost, and good. This is rigged. Got to make it too big to rig. These things have to be too big to rig so Matt DeSantis can't rig it. All right, coming up in the fourth and final hour today, big apprehensions of some bad hombres, a big MS-13 gang leader taken down. And the Democrats who are pushing back are making everybody look at them as, because they're crazy people. And yet they're doubling down on their craziness and their insanity. That's the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, VanariaDental.com. VanariaDental.com. Now, look, spring is here. The question I have for you is, what are you going to do about your lawn? It's time to start thinking about that beautiful, lush, healthy green grass. And you want greener grass with fewer weeds, and you want it to be guaranteed. That's what you want. And that's why you should use my lawn care company, Natural Lawn of America. You know, Natural Lawn of America has been serving our area for decades, and they do such an incredible job. The reason why it works is because their safer, organic-based approach actually is what your lawn needs, and it's safer for the kids, safer for the pets, safer for everybody all around.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.